Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Barely Even Friends, a novel by Mae Bennett, narrated by Victoria Connolly. Chapter 1. It was impossible to take my father seriously when he wore onesie pajamas.
"You must drive Philippe."
He made multiple flourishes with his palms, thrusting the keys to his painstakingly restored Mustang into my hand before yanking them back at the last moment. His eyes narrowed.
"But please, take care of my darling."
"My darling" is a bit much. My fingers curled around the key ring, wondering at what point in the past 26 years I had become the adult in this dynamic. Dad shifted the pillow behind his back.
"Bellamy, my favorite daughter."
"Your only daughter. Only child, if we were going for total accuracy." He huffed.
"True, but I was referring to the car."
"Ouch, that hurt. But, well, the man had insisted on naming his car, so not surprising. Who was I kidding? He loved that car more than anything else. Cars were not my specialty, but no matter its monetary value, it was worth significantly more to my dad.
"I still think we should advise them to hold off a few more days, for when I'm feeling better."
His attempt to take a deep breath resulted in a hacking cough, racking through his body and making my heart clench. "I wheeled you out of the hospital a week ago, Dad. Flu and bronchitis aren't something you walk off. You need rest, not construction dust and mold." It wasn't the first time we'd had this debate. Giving up control had never come easily to him, a biological trait my father had passed on to me. He also happened to be my employer. "I can handle it."
"I trust you. You learned from the best."
The attempt to puff out his chest merely gave the cars patterned across his onesie more prominence.
"You are the daughter of the great..."
More coughing.
"Maurice Price. We have a history of excellence to uphold."
But this project wasn't our typical commission. Restoring older homes was losing its popularity as the uber-wealthy coveted modern builds and the latest technology. Most of our recent clients were local governments or nonprofits. That was the risk of working in such a niche market. We were often one contract away from ruin. "I promise to uphold our family legacy." I raised my palm, swearing fealty to my liege, while trying and failing to not roll my eyes. Mostly, I humored him out of relief. The more demanding he became, the better I knew he was getting. Every moment in the emergency room, which felt longer than only a few days ago, I had sat in fear, while my father lay prone, swallowed by the hospital bed. He was on the mend now, but he still needed to finish recovering. Dad began to fiddle with the heart rate monitor from his bedside table, a gift from his visiting nurse. My gaze narrowed as I realized the true reason he was willing to hand over the keys to his beloved car, eager to get rid of me. "Let's not pretend this isn't about Nurse Betty." A blush immediately developed on his pale white skin.
"Well, she is most becoming."
Dad was a short, portly man, with hair the same deep chestnut as mine. His normally clean-shaven face sported the rough beard he had grown in the hospital. It was impossible to hold back my groan. "Oh, becoming?" How he had any game at all was beyond me.
"The woman is an angel sent from above."
"An angel sent to keep you alive. Her continued visits, now that you're able to feed and bathe yourself, might also be a touch of insurance fraud." But what was insurance fraud when it came to love? I, for one, would not criticize the person who was going to be checking up on him. Not when I was about to walk out the door myself. Betty could commit all the scams she wanted if it meant Dad would be taken care of.
Like you said, I'm still a sickly man.
This cough was a bit more forced, his eyes gazing at me in that all-seeing parent way.
You know, this would be a great opportunity to find yourself someone becoming without your dearest father hanging around. I know how intimidating I can be.
He winked. That was the last thing I needed, a distraction while I dealt with my first solo project, the one that could ruin us or set us up for life. I didn't have time for romance, not with Dan's brush off living rent-free in my brain. I eased off the bed, smoothing out the comforter, before pressing a kiss to Dad's forehead. All right, I'm going to head out. He caught my hand, keeping me at his bedside.
I'm serious, Bellamy. It's been, what, a year since Dan?
Over a year, and I'm fine. This project is too important for me to allow any complications. I did not need my father to lecture me about dating. Our career doesn't exactly lend itself to relationships. I have other goals right now. Dan was a mistake, a hiccup, one I wouldn't make again. I had learned my lesson and had maintained heartbreak-free since we moved on to our next project.
Bellamy?
Dad! I stretched the word out into too many unnecessary syllables.
The Bib would be elated to have you.
I appreciate his shift away from discussing my lack of a love life, even as I rolled my eyes at the reminder of my dream job, curator at my favorite museum. Whenever we were home from a project, I would spend hours, days, walking through the exhibits of the Bib, letting my dreams breathe of being the one to plan out the rooms. A position like that would mean no more moving around from project to project. It would mean staying in one place, putting down roots. There isn't even an official opening. It's a rumor. One I desperately wanted to be true.
After this project, they'll create a position for you.
Because world-famous museums did that all the time, sure. All I could do was shake my head. You need more rest, and I need to get going. It's not exactly a short drive. With a sigh, he yanked me the rest of the way, wrapping his short arms around my body.
Call and check in every day.
To get your approval on the plans, go over estimates, and send photos daily with updates. I finished. We've been through this. Not my first project. Dad was technically my boss, but I couldn't take his authority seriously when, again, the onesie. He gave me a last squeeze, helping to dispel some of my nerves.
But your first time solo. This is a career maker.
I hoped he didn't notice the way my fingers trembled as I shoved my shoulder-length hair into a messy ponytail. My fuller, curvy frame was all him, though my height and brown hair were from my mother. Like I said, I've learned from the best. One step at a time. First, the impossible project. Then maybe, just maybe, the impossible job.
Well, take care.
A beat.
I'm referring to the car again, to be clear.
This time, I didn't hide my eye roll as I pressed my palm over my heart. Touching.
It took me 8 years to rebuild it. You merely took 9 months to build.
He loved that joke. With a final bittersweet squeeze of his hand, I strode out of our fourth floor walk-up. Dad preferred to stay on site for a project rather than oversee from afar, spending his time restoring other people's homes instead of establishing one of our own. His place in Brooklyn was big enough that I had never moved out, since most of the time we were both on assignment outside of New York. We were each other's family. My mother left when I was a few months old, not a fan of Dad's nomadic lifestyle. Her presence was a whisper of a memory. He was the only parent I'd ever needed, the one who stayed. But now, this was my opportunity to prove, to myself, to both of us, to the world, that I was more than Maurice Price's daughter. Philippe was parked in the underground garage of Dad's building. The Mustang's black lacquer paint job gleamed, as if Dad had been down recently for his typical weekly wash and polish. I blew out a breath, resisting the urge to text my annoyance at him when he was supposed to be on bed rest. Not much could keep my dad down. My life fit perfectly into two suitcases and the backpack slung over my shoulder. My room in Dad's apartment was bare bones, all my efforts spent on other people's homes. I loaded the address into the Maps application on my phone, clicked on my favorite playlist, and pulled out of the garage into the cloud-filled day, settling in the driver's seat for my more than six-hour road trip. The Killington property was located in upstate New York, the portion that meant you were in Amish country, looking to flee to Canada at a moment's notice, or richer than the king. The Killingtons fit into the last category. Their house, a 19th-century mansion, hadn't been updated once it received indoor plumbing and electricity. This was going to be one hell of a job, a mix of restoration meets modernization, our biggest undertaking to date. Dad had been contracted to restore the property almost 10 years prior, but at the last minute, the family canceled the job, forcing my father to scramble to make up the income. This opportunity was a redemption for him and his reputation. I had joined the family firm, Price Restoration, after college, where I double majored in history and architecture, my dream of working alongside my father coming true. We had talked about me taking the lead on projects, of one day me being the primary, but that was supposed to be years away. With his illness, medical bills, and our bank accounts dwindling, the timetable had been rushed forward. And now here I was, alone, and with none of the safety nets I typically leaned on. No pressure. When I was 45 minutes away, having made good time with only two quick stops for snacks and to fill up the tank, the darkening sky that had followed me from the city grew ominous. Nothing but sparse roads needing repair, trees still bare from the winter as far as the eye could see. Houses spaced apart, not by a few feet, but miles. There was a crash of thunder, and the clouds opened. Raindrops hit the windshield with increasing velocity until I could barely see, even with the wipers going and the headlights on full beams. Wiry tree limbs closed in on both sides of the car, threatening Philippe's perfect paint job, the road narrowing into a single wide lane. I pressed my teeth to my bottom lip in concentration. It was too late to turn back, and there were no inns nearby to stop at and wait out the storm, the area too rural. I spotted a few turnoffs, but with such spotty phone service, I had no idea where they would lead. Nowhere to go but forward. Slowing my speed as my ETA grew later and later, my sole companions were my playlist and the purr of the engine. The world shrunk as the rain pounded down on the windshield. My fingers clutched the leather of the steering wheel. The swish-swish of the wipers almost drowned out my music. The ground was covered in dirty snow, left over from a storm a few days ago. At least today it wasn't cold enough to snow. Yet. Only the headlights broke the darkness, along with flashes of lightning across the sky, growing more and more frequent. Nope. This in no way appeared ominous for the project I was about to embark on. I sighed. Not a sign. I lowered the music as I leaned forward. Well, that was a street sign. I squinted as water poured out of the sky. But this is not a sign. The sun is going to come out any moment. It did not. There hadn't been a town or house for miles when I turned onto the drive leading to the Killington estate. I drove another mile until I reached the wrought iron gates. Two posts, each with a gargoyle missing a body part or two. I'd worry later about how expensive that fix would be. First, I just needed it to open, before I had to discover whether Philippe could also act as a boat. A small brown, rusted box appeared to be my best option for getting inside. I scowled as I rolled down the window, wincing at the rain splattering the leather, knowing what my father would say. I pressed the buzzer, desperate for someone to answer quickly. They should be expecting me, even if I was late. Everything about this project was off. Me being in charge, no new blueprints for the estate. By this stage, we'd have sketched out some ideas to present to the owners. But with the Killingtons, they asked, and you said yes. They were a family known for their exacting expectations and old money. This estate was one of many properties they owned located throughout the United States, with more scattered around Europe. And that didn't include the family yacht. At least we had had the old sketches Dad had done 10 years back to get us started, since I had been left with almost no time to prep. The Killington Empire had its fingers in multiple industries, investing early and wisely. The family still retained majority shares in the parent company, Killington Holdings, run for decades by Adrian Killington. They were sparse on information, but had stated that the only upkeep in the decades since Dad had been unceremoniously dropped was by a caretaker overseeing the acres of property. The Killingtons' approval would lead to more jobs and potentially a contract to work exclusively on their properties, setting me and Dad up for life. The freezing wind splashed the even colder rain onto my face, leaving every exposed part of me soaked. This wasn't a storm, but pure violence swirling in the air.
"We don't need any,"
scratched out of the rusted speaker. The caretaker, I had to presume.
"Hello, this is Bellamy. Bellamy Price of Price Restoration."
My voice wavered, a combination of nerves and the wind slapping rain in my face, forcing water down my throat. My breath hung in the chilled air, cold enough for me to see it. Droplets continued to pound into the car through the open window as I waited. The gates opened, and before they could close on me, I rolled up the window and pressed on the gas, the broken gargoyles surveilling. As I crept forward, poorly maintained hedges lined the entrance, leading to what I assumed was the main house. More bushes waiting for the spring hid the extent of the estate, the world shrinking to this single point, place, and time. It was another lengthy distance before I arrived, the lane curving a path around the outside of the mansion. The house was imposing. 3 stories, a sweeping roof, likely a Georgian influence, from what I could tell through flashes of lightning. The entire estate appeared frozen in time, older, the windows symmetrical, with dead vines crawling up the brick. I gave up trying to find an overhang to park the car. Grabbing my backpack, I abandoned the rest of my luggage for when the world wasn't ending. Despite my sprint for the front door, I was soaked to the bone. I shivered as another clap of thunder highlighted the weathered door and its brass knocker. Nothing to protect me from the elements. Before I could raise my hand, the door swung open. I leaped inside, skidding as my wet shoes slid against the marble floors. My arms waved wildly in an effort to find my balance and not fall on my ass or smack into the circular hall table. When I righted myself, the front door banged shut, and my heart palpitated in my chest as I glanced around. I was alone, standing in darkness with an overwhelming smell of must. "Hello?" I called out, my voice echoing. Silence. "It's Bellamy Price?" No response. "What in the actual fuck?" I muttered. I clutched the strap of my backpack as I listened for someone while dripping all over their floor. I clicked on the flashlight from my phone. A chandelier hung above me, the dirty crystals catching some of the light and bouncing it around the room. A dramatic double staircase wound down from the second floor. The wooden banister needed a few coats of stain. Must, dust, and age filled the air, making it a struggle to breathe deeply, confirming that the space hadn't received a good cleaning or been lived in for a long time. This estate had been in their family for generations. How was there not a staff maintaining the place, even if they weren't in residence? I swiped away a layer of dust from the table in the middle of the foyer, revealing scratches and dings. If this place weren't in the middle of nowhere, I'd be concerned I was at the wrong residence. There was no way a Killington had lived here recently, if not for decades.
"What have you done?"
an angry British-accented voice said.
"He will be very upset."
I spun, searching, but I was still alone. What had I walked into? The floor creaked with every movement I made, maybe even every breath. This place was creepy. Though I might have been more anxious it was going to collapse around me than anything else. I clutched my backpack, as if it could plausibly work as a weapon, and crept toward where the voice had seemed to come from.
"You could not expect me to leave the young woman in the rain. What kind of hospitality is that?"
said another voice, enthusiastic with a slight baritone. Adult, but it was impossible to predict an age. How many people were hiding in this place?
"He will be outraged, and rightfully so."
The first bodiless voice filled the space, anger still resounding in its clipped consonants.
"Hello?"
My voice carried through the rooms, bounding off the chipped ceilings and the peeling original wallpaper that pained me to even look at.
"Is this some kind of hazing? Could someone, come out now?"
"Miss Price, please sit by the fire. Make yourself at home."
This tone was welcoming, but a shiver still worked its way down my spine. Well, at least I'd be warm before the axe murderer killed me. My survival instincts were a mess.
"Thank you, but who? Where are you exactly?"
"We are the staff of the manor, ma'am. All that matters is that you are comfortable. Concentrate on warming yourself. We will take care of everything. Are you hungry?"
There was a harumph of opposition. Despite that, no one showed their face. What was this? The friendliest haunted house that had ever existed? There was a staff. Why had no one shared that information? The heat from the fire made a small dent in the chill in my bones. I tried to get as close as I could without falling in. There was no grate to protect me from the open flame.
"Why can't I see you?"
"That is because I am a..."
A snarl sliced through the muted patter of rain on the lead mullioned windows. A door upstairs slammed, then footsteps stomped down one of the stairwells into the front foyer. All my organs tried to dive out of my skin at the same moment as my gaze sought for any explanation.
Fuckity fuck! The axe murderer knew I was here. This was it? I searched for a weapon, but it was fruitless.
The furniture and fixtures around me, while dusty, were priceless antiques. Well, they would be after they were repaired and restored. Maurice Price's daughter would never risk an antique Tiffany lamp, even if her life depended on it. They were history from long before I was born and would hopefully be there long after me. Which, it seemed, as the thumping neared, wasn't likely to be more than the next 5 minutes.
How can there not be at least a fire poker? I searched for a candlestick to sacrifice, but nothing.
The door to the room I had found myself in crashed open, and I winced at the wood breaking. No wonder this place was crumbling with how it was being treated.
"What are you doing in my house?"
Standing behind the chair was the first person I had seen since entering this bonkers place. His body was hidden by the darkness, a hulking outline made larger by the shadow from the fire. I scrambled farther away, a squeak erupting as I fell against the wainscoting, part of which was crumbling at the contact.
"Why are you here?"
The axe murderer growled out, contempt dripping from his voice, matching in time with the water droplets I was leaving on the scored wood floor.
I was hired.
My voice was weak, barely a whisper. I detested conflict of any kind, and this was conflict with a capital C.
Not by me. Get out.
May we all have the tenacity of a man who is, in fact, wrong.
The Killingtons hired us.
We don't need any more staff. Leave!
He roared the last word. Any hint of nerves dissipated. This was a bit much.
Could we have a civilized conversation?
I straightened my spine and crossed my arms over my chest, wishing I didn't look like a drowned rat.
I don't have civilized conversations with trespassers. Go.
Listen, asshole. I've been driving for hours through what seems to be an act of God hailstorm, been led into this creepy mansion by disembodied voices, and now there's you. I'm supposed to be here, and I'm not going anywhere.
I'm the asshole? He scoffed. I'm not the one breaking and entering.
My fingers clenched into fists. Whoever operates your front gate let me in. And yes, you are the asshole, skulking in the shadows, trying to be intimidating. Just show me whoever is in charge and we can clear all of this up. He snarled, large hands sliding down the fabric of the armchair.
The fireplace crackled, hail pounding on the roof, the water on my eyelashes freezing.
Rather than answer my question, he circled the chair, the light dancing across his body, revealing the high-handed stranger. Chapter 2.
Why did the asshole have to be hot? Why?
He strolled around the armchair, distracting me from the worn fabric. My gaze caught on black pants hugging the tree trunks he had for thighs, and he ran his hand through jet black hair that was recklessly tied off. The heavy, dark eyebrow rose, slashed above his eye.
I'm no longer skulking. Now will you leave?
His voice hadn't lost the hoarseness. He defiantly crossed his arms against his barrel chest, a gray V-neck t-shirt tight against his biceps. And he had a beard. I had a weakness for beards, though that was counteracted by the whole asshole banishment thing. I'm supposed to be here. If you'd let me explain, maybe a calmer tone would ratchet down some of the tension, including my desire to throw a priceless vase at him. I was not a violent person, but he was bringing out something in me.
Sir? The friendly voice from earlier hedged.
Stop calling me that.
Another growl. Well, at least he was this gracious with everyone. But the welcoming voice wasn't put off.
Adrian Killington has hired Price Restoration to renovate the estate.
Silence met the information, and I couldn't hold off the smug smile that spread.
That's why you're here.
The sir leaned against the chair, seeming to regret his decision when it wobbled, his gaze never leaving me. Many of the articles that had come up in my Google search were focused on two of his grandchildren, twin granddaughters. So what did that make this man? A distant cousin? The caretaker? I had spent every moment Dad was sleeping in the hospital trying to research the property, not the family.
I'm Bellamy Price. Mr. Killington hired my father and me to restore his estate.
Attempting to remain professional, I wiped my sweaty palm on my thigh before thrusting it forward. I shook empty air.
Well, there's been a misunderstanding. No upgrades needed.
Instead of accepting my waiting hand, the man massaged his thigh, shoulders hunched, glaring at me. It took everything in me not to laugh at his serious expression. The mantle of the fireplace was missing chunks of marble, the fire highlighting the dust that hung in the air. Is that the judgment of the family of rats in the walls?
Sir, we cannot allow her to leave in this weather.
still bodiless.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?